The vast emptiness of space is kind of filling up with junk. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino. Folded among the big dollar programs in President Biden's latest budget proposal is a small sliver, $88 million, to study and track space junk. That's everything from defunct satellites to the debris caused from explosions in space. The president wants the Office of Space Commerce to ramp up its ability to track this stuff in real time. Now, $88 million's not a lot to do that, but it's a lot more than the $10 million the office got last year. Maura Bajwa teaches orbital mechanics at UT Austin and is chief science officer and co-founder of the space debris tracking company Privateer. He says scientists are currently tracking about 50,000 pieces of space debris down to the size of a cell phone, but there's more out there.
If we look at the number of pieces that go below the size of the cell phone all the way to a speck of paint, we actually believe that it's probably more like a million or several million. And these are the things that we can't track. And for all intents and purposes, it's almost like random bullets. And so just like a bullet can do a lot of damage at the speed of a bullet, something that is, you know, speck of paint traveling at 15 times the speed of a bullet hits a satellite or even an astronaut piercing the suit, and it's a bad day.
What tools do we have right now to track this space debris?
The sensing systems that we have to do this sort of stuff are really radars and telescopes.
And to what extent can you sort of track things and actually predict where they might end up in the future?
There's uncertainty in everything. We can't measure everything, so we have to infer stuff. And even though we have these radars and telescopes, we only kind of have an idea of where in space these things are. And orbital mechanics gives us like the physics of how things are going to move. But because our initial understanding of where something is uncertain, that means that whatever we predict, we're actually predicting uncertainty as we go along in the future.
What tools do we have to sort of minimize the inherent ambiguity in these processes?
So there's a couple of things that we can do to minimize the ambiguity. One is just have, you know, better models of the physics and actually the ability to predict what people might do in a common situation. Two, actually collecting more measurements. So there's strength in numbers. If we can aggregate massive quantities of independent observations, and that's the key thing, independent observations, minimizing ambiguity comes as a result of aggregating independent observations, and each new independent piece of evidence can then remove ignorance. And that's what we're after. We're after ignorance removal.
And so how meaningful would this extra funding in the president's budget be for the work that you do?
I think a lot of good could be done with it. There are so many commercially available capabilities out there. I think the hard part really is to integrate these sorts of things. Because so many people say, oh, well, I have the answer. You know, I'm Acme Incorporated. Just give me money and I'll solve it for you, which is complete rubbish. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, nobody has that capability. But, you know, one of the things that I, you know, ask people is, how do you know that you have the world's most accurate clock? And the answer is you have hundreds of them. Each one has an opinion on the time. And by aggregating all these opinions, you get to see the mean of what the time is. And that's the time standard. And I think space traffic and space situation awareness, if the U.S. government purchases and acquires all of these opinions and aggregates these and integrates them, then you can use that as a standard. So I think that's how the government needs to actually use this money.
And you have come up with a tool actually a few years ago that is publicly available called AstriaGraph. How does that work? Where does it pull data from? What makes it different?
So AstriaGraph is trying to get to this idea of the aggregation of multiple sources of information. And so the idea is just that, is to aggregate all these sources of information, see where all these opinions reside, and then maybe find a way to achieve consensus amongst these opinions. Some are conflicting, but that's what I did at UT. Now, you know, co-founding Privateer with Alex Fielding and Steve Wozniak, basically I'm taking AstriaGraph, which is mostly something demonstrative and researchy, to something that people can actually depend upon and provide some 24/7, you know, services and capabilities, like a Waze for space is kind of the direction that we're going with that.
And in sort of an ironic twist, I understand that Privateer might actually launch its own satellite to get better data on this stuff.
You know, when we want to get data on what's going on in the oceans, for instance, we launch buoys to collect some data and to do monitoring and that sort of thing. I kind of see it analogous to that. Buoys are part of the ocean traffic, but they're serving a purpose, you know, not just the scientific, but maybe some other purposes. And so we're going to have some satellites that are going to be on orbit doing some monitoring. They're going to augment other sources of information that we bring in. And certainly we're going to be partnering with other folks and just having our sensors on their satellites. So I think it's all of the above. It's really a decision intelligence platform that doesn't say no to any source of information.
It's interesting you compared this idea to like a Waze for space. When you look at the Astrograph or the new Privateer one, that's what kind of what it reminded me of. It's like a map dense with all these little dots, and every dot is a piece of space junk. The idea is you'll sell these maps? I mean, who might buy them?
The thing about me is I'm always like a hybrid kind of a dude. And what I'm saying by that is that there's going to be multiple levels of information. Some will be free to the public for sure. And whatever is free to the public will actually be useful to help with making space, you know, safer, more secure, more sustainable kind of stuff. If people want, look, I want a prediction, not, you know, a day's not good enough. I want a week's worth of predictions with a lot more accuracy and precision. Or, you know, I want to know, you know, who's maneuvering instantaneously around my objects. I think these are things that we can charge a fee for. You know, Waze is a participatory sensing network, meaning we, the users of Waze, get to actually provide information that everybody in the network gets to take advantage of, you know, piece of debris on the road and that sort of stuff. So we're thinking about allowing the general public and amateur astronomers, like, let the global community actually participate in providing some of the information that then it gets some benefit from as well.
Tracking this space junk seems to be very important, but is it inevitable that it's just going to keep growing over time, or are there ways to actually remove some of it?
When it comes to the growth of the space junk, I equate it to the spread of COVID. We want to flatten the curve on the growth of space debris. And the thing that is the main hindrance is a lack of compliance with the science. So there's a group of people around the globe, scientists, engineers, whatever, that have said, hey, if you follow this checklist, we can actually flatten the curve on the growth of debris. But by and large, the guidelines are just recommendations, suggestions instead of law. So I think the countries that authorize and license people to operate in space, they need to make these guidelines law in their own country and then hold their own, you know, citizenry accountable for following these things and enforce that.
Maura Bajra is a professor at UT Austin and chief science officer at Privateer. And now for some related links. If you want to check out that space junk tracking map, we've got a link to the Astrograph at marketplacetech.org. Moore Bajra referenced a UN policy on debris mitigation, which not everyone is exactly following. It includes guidance like avoiding intentional destruction of spacecraft. That's according to a 2010 paper from the UN Office for Outer Space Affairs. I don't know why all these official government space things just sound like spoof names to me, but this stuff is definitely serious business. In fact, the U.S. Senate Armed Services Committee recently discussed space debris as a potential national security threat, according to a story from Wired. It's become a concern in the war in Ukraine, where satellite imagery and satellite internet are really important. Space junk collisions could put those satellites at risk and make it unclear whether Russia is actively trying to disrupt satellite transmissions. As to efforts to clean up some of the junk, Scientific American reports ideas over the years have included nets, lasers, giant foam balls, and harpoons. One company is actually working on magnet-based technology to help capture and burn up debris, but the magazine says there isn't a one-size-fits-all solution. Meanwhile, it's about to get even more crowded up in low Earth orbit. Amazon just reserved more than 80 rocket launches as part of a plan to send more than 3,000 satellites into orbit to offer high-speed broadband. Not that I would ever accuse Amazon of propagating junk, though the stack of cardboard boxes accumulating in my recycle bin might beg to differ. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.